Not me. I'm
you make me wonder if I want to keep on playing this game.
Supposed to be a chill game.
People get a little frenzied over that.
It just sounds like a Capitalism Simulator 101.
Oh, it is.
It kind of is, but without the evil. Like, there's no interest rates. You're not breaking the back of anyone.
The lack of interest rates, I think, is...
There were interest rates. If you put... it's not coming to bite you in the ass. No,
Player 2 Pixelcast, episode 33. My name is Tim Henderson. I am back in the host chair, as is the case every other episode. I am very sorry. Fortunately for all of you, I am not here alone. I am flying beside the Captain in Chief, Mr. Matt Hewson. How are you doing?
I like these titles you give me. Like, it implies that I know what I'm doing, and you know, it makes me feel good about myself.
Well, we could go with Daddy. We had a big lot of Daddy issues last episode.
Yeah, we had that one. We've
done
that one.
The man on the shower curtain, Matthew Hewson.
Although, technically, this is bad because this is like a waste of good faith, but since, like, Hope very generously invited me into her Switch family, she is now technically my Switch mummy, so let's back it up.
Yes, good.
Right, we are also joined by one Paul James.
Howdy, howdy, how are we?
Not drunk enough yet. I finished my beer before we even started recording. That's how professional we are at the moment.
Yeah, I didn't bring a refill, and this is disappearing fast.
Yeah, see, you're sitting with beer, but if we want to get drinks interesting, Stephen, what are you drinking again?
It's a mixture of some homemade cold brew coffee, some 100% pure Canadian maple syrup, and some Bullet Bourbon Frontier Whiskey that's actually a mixture of Bullet Bourbon and Bullet Rye, because I couldn't stand the rye anymore, so I just put the rest of it into the regular Bullet,
hoping it would improve the flavor.
There are so many layers to that.
Very precise.
And I'm happy to say that it's quite pleasant.
Okay, so if you want to take Steve's word for it, you can
do that.
Mix two different bourbons together with some maple syrup and whatever. Or you could just drink a normal person drink. Anyway, I guess essentially may be the name of the game. We are going to be focusing... It's going to be just kind of an indie bonanza for the second half of this episode. Going to, like, just talk about love for, like, certain indie games we love, new and old. Probably going to try and focus on the ones that have maybe either kind of faded away with time or maybe slipped under the radar the first time around. But before that, though, we have a lot of strategy. Huso, how's that new smaller XCOM thing?
New
strategy-ish?
XCOM is awesome, but that's no surprise because it's XCOM. My love for XCOM is well known, and I was actually a little apprehensive about this one because it was announced like 3 weeks ago and then came out on Friday, and out of nowhere, the day it was announced, I reached out to 2K Australia and said, put my name down on that spreadsheet for a review copy, and they said, oh, here's a review copy. So,
what spreadsheet?
I had a good... What spreadsheet? And so I dived in expecting kind of just a tiny throwaway experience, I guess. It kind of came out of nowhere. I was just thinking it'd be a bit of a throwaway game. It's really not. They've used it as an excuse to experiment with the formula in some really cool ways. There's some of the XCOM staples are no longer there, like the ability to customize your characters and create, you know, soldiers named after your brother and send him off to his death. You can't do that anymore because there's hero units. There's 12 units all up, and they're all different. They're all very different. They all have different abilities. Some of them are aliens that you fought in previous XCOM games, because the story is it's 5 years after the events of XCOM 2, and everyone's kind of living happily together in this city. The overlords, which were the kind of heads of the invasion, have left. They've been defeated, and now everyone's kind of just making do with the current society. So you've got a mix of these characters that you've fought before, but you're playing as them these times. And so these characters all have personalities. There's kind of this ongoing action movie kind of dialogue, quippy sort of thing going on in between them all. So that's how it starts out, which is very different. It's not dark and very serious like XCOM 2 is. XCOM 2 is very war is bad sort of serious tone, whereas this is a lot more lighthearted. It's smaller scale. It's set in one city instead of the entire world. So everything's kind of a bit shrunken down. The meta is still there, the XCOM meta. You've got base, you've got, you know, research, and you've got upgrades for your troops and all those sort of things that you'd expect. The gameplay where the real change is, they've added a new mechanic. So because everything's kind of built around the combat encounters more than just kind of these big maps, they have confined encounters that you play. And each encounter starts with a breach. Because it's set in a city, you're essentially like a SWAT unit, I guess, is how it plays. So it's set in a city, and each encounter, some missions have three or four encounters. Each encounter starts with a breach. So you breach the doors, and quite often you have more than one option in how you want to breach. So you can send all your units through one breach point, or you can spread them out over multiple. And each breach point has different bonuses and different negatives to associate it with it. For example, the front door, you might get attacked more as you breach, but you also may get a damage bonus because you're closer to the enemy. If you go through the window, you can surprise enemies and get a free shot on them, those sort of things. So as you breach the door, everyone gets one shot on the enemy. So choosing who to pick as you breach through the door is essential, actually. So you can either send all four of your units breaching to target the biggest bad guy in the room and hope you take him down in that move, which is possible, or you can spread the damage over a lot of people and make them all easier to tackle during normal gameplay. So once the breach is completed, it turns to normal XCOM, where it becomes turn-based strategy with two moves each player has. So for example, you've got an action move and then you've got your fire move. And once you fire, that player's turns over and it moves to the next one. And then it becomes normal XCOM, but with these hero units that have different abilities that add a whole bunch of spice to the game. Like, I was surprised at how much the game changed by which team you took into battle. And it allowed for a huge range of different strategies. There's a snake guy that you can play as who was one of the aliens in the XCOM 2, but
I remember that one. Hated him.
Yeah, you remember that one? Yeah.
Yeah, pain in the ass.
Pain in the ass. So, but you can do all those moves that he could do in that type of alien could do. So you can drag them with your tail and bind them as a snake and crush them to death. And that essentially takes that alien out of consideration that bad guy out of consideration for the whole match. Works really well. And there's all these, there's area of effects. There's the aliens that can mind control. You've got one of those. So you can create this kind of mind network where you're controlling a whole bunch of bad guys at once. So there's a lot of strategy there. They've done a lot with a kind of a 20, 15-hour campaign. There's no multiplayer.
It's still pretty decent.
It's still pretty decent. And there's a lot of stuff. Like, it's very... it's much more welcoming than XCOM 2.
I want to bring up this meme because I absolutely love this. My main issue, and it's not just me with a lot of XCOM games, is... And it must have been a month and a half ago I first saw this, which was... But I love the way it was put forward, which was, like, scientists saying death rate from COVID is... Or survival probability is 99%, and then followed by, like, XCOM players be like, and then switch for face just drenched in sweat.
Yeah, yeah. So that seems to be fixed. A part of that taken out is there's no sniper class anymore. And snipers were where that kind of meme really hit home because of the way it did the RNG in the background. But it seems to be much more accurate this time, the percentage rating. So if you've got a 70% chance of hitting...
You will actually hit 7 out of 10 times,
yeah. So that's what it felt like to me anyway. I didn't ever feel like it was being excessive.
I don't know
unfair.
The math, but I could swear from when I, like, the time I tried to get into the... When I say the original, I mean the reboot original.
The Firaxis.
That I was missing a disproportionate number of those 90%+ hits.
Yeah. And this has a better indication of cover and things. So... If you're in full cover, you actually get it's an equivalent of one unit of armor to your health bar. So you've kind of got these visual representations of what the cover can do. So even if you do get hit in full cover, you've got extra protection from that that takes some of the damage. So things like that. And it seems much more welcoming. But at the same time, there's plenty there for an XCOM head like myself to get a kick out of. Like, there's the Iron Man modes, there's the super hard modes. You've got options to, when between each encounter, to heal. So if you want to play on an easier mode, you can have your players full or half heal between each encounter, or you can just have it so that any damage they took in the first encounter carries through to the final encounter, and if there's four encounters, you're in trouble. But yeah, it's really well thought out. It's not as grand, and it's probably not as time consuming and engaging for as XCOM 2 is, for especially for those people that love this sort of game. But it is 15 hours of awesome welcoming strategy fun, and I can't say anything really bad about it. I've seen a lot of people mention some graphic and stuff problems. I didn't really have anything giant major. I occasionally, the camera wigged out a little bit on a shot and you shot through a wall or something like that, but really that was about all I experienced as far as tech problems go. So really, I mean, for the price, even now that it's back to its full price, because it was being sold for half price originally at $15, it's now being sold for $30. Even at $30, it's $30 well spent.
Yeah, and I guess it might actually appeal to me a bit more. I mean, I have a friend who's like on the complete other end of the spectrum, who's like completely hardcore with this very specific type of thing. Over Christmas, I caught up with her in Melbourne for the first time in years, and she played my copy of Into the Breach. It took her about 2 rounds to like kind of get used to like what the mechanics were. Then she finished the first island with taking 1 unit of damage.
Oh shit.
She is superhuman at this shit. So I was speaking to her about it, and she's like, this isn't as deep. But I'm sitting there going, you know, someone like me who like, I like Rabbids more, frankly, I would like a Rabbids mode where it's like guaranteed 50% on hell. This may be a little bit closer to like pulling me in.
This is definitely closer to that Rabbids. This is, I guess, the closest thing to proper XCOM with Rabbids kind of welcoming sort of approach.
Because I was wondering, obviously, now we with said that a lot of people have been saying that Mario versus Rabbids is like, you know, baby's first XCOM. And I imagine that the XCOM developers are like, well, we can just make a game that's baby's first XCOM that's actually XCOM.
If they had a Rabbids mode where it like was 50% because I am happy to play baby's first XCOM. Let's not take away from it. Rabbids is really good
as an XCOM fan. It's really good, and this is certainly more welcoming, but it's kind of straddling between Mario and Rabbids and XCOM.
It's kind of like that
traditional
next step.
Yeah. They're just that next step up. I mean, it has lots of options there for those that are hardcore into XCOM. So if you want to play in Iron Man mode with no saves and permadeath and all that sort of stuff, you can absolutely do that. If you want to be a bit more lenient on how you play, then you could do that too. It's more open in those sort and more forgiving in those sort of options. And because of the tighter nature of the game, the maps are smaller because, like I said, you're kind of like this SWAT team busting in through rooms and things. Everything's kind of contained to these small maps. That means it's a bit quicker. It's a bit your shots hit more often because everything's closer. Area of effect and knowing your surroundings is more important than, I guess, clean shots. So you know, it's a little bit more forgiving in that area. So yeah, it's a great title and totally surprised me, considering how it was released to no one's knowledge and
the fact that it just came out like wow.
I just thought it was going to be a throwaway, but it really isn't. They've thought long and hard, and they've used it as an excuse to kind of experiment. So good on them.
It's probably a smart cross-generational period move, actually.
Yeah. It makes me excited for XCOM 3, anyway. Really excited for XCOM 3.
XCOM 3 is probably a couple of years away.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big, all right, everything's moved up, let's go next-gen hardware. Assume you have an SSD, go nuts.
Yep.
But until then, Paul, like, how much stress has Gears Tactics been giving you? We're going to keep this strategy thing rolling.
Stress? Very little. So I'm not the veteran of the genre, like Matt is, for example. I've dabbled in XCOM, and I've messed around with Rabbids and those sort of things over the journey, but I wouldn't call myself any sort of expert. But yeah, thanks to Xbox, got sent a copy of Gears Tactics. And I thoroughly enjoyed every moment of it. The review is up on the website, so please go check that out. But the thing about it, and the things I've kind of learnt from either having played XCOM in the past, I very quickly bought the latest one while it was cheap after Matt was kind of singing its praises, but I haven't gotten around to it yet, so I watched the Player 2 plays that he put out there, just to kind of compare and contrast a little bit what I was seeing with Gears Tactics and just kind of refresh myself somewhat. I guess what people kind of come to expect from XCOM in some ways, you've got fewer enemies compared to what you're dealing with in Gears Tactics, for one. It does make a big difference to kind of the way you approach the combat somewhat. I don't know, Matt, if you'd quite use this terminology yourself, but sometimes the enemies in XCOM can be slightly bullet spongy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no,
like
they can be.
They're not really the case outside of some key bosses, and you know, there's a few big boss encounters with fairly iconic sort of Gears monsters or locusts specifically. You can kind of burn through the enemies at a far rate of clip, whether it's just the stock standard hammer burst drones or whether you're dealing with some tickers that come through. You've got each character, you've got four of them out on the field at any given time. They've all got three moves each. You can kind of rig your skills in a certain way to maybe double that in a few people's cases. Snipers, you were talking about snipers before and kind of how they get memed on a little bit. In the case of Gears Tactics, they're kind of sort of overpowered a bit. In the sense that, like, if you get the right set of skills, I had one round where I had 8 turns with the sniper and I took out 6 or 7 enemies. And it was just how, like, there's one skill there that if you just hit the target, that's 2 new turns. This is already on top of the 3 that I started off with. Obviously, I've burnt one of those to use that, but there's an increase there. Next one, if I it's kind of an all or nothing shot, but if I hit this target, that's another 3 turns that I get from it. Then one more where I'll get if I hit the target, I obviously register and kill it specifically. I'll also get to reload in the process. So if you can rig those things the right way, and it does require a little bit of luck, obviously there is that percentage component to it, just like XCOM. If you can get everything right with the sniper, you can dominate and just like get yourself in a shitty situation and wriggle your way out of it just with some perfect shooting. But they do throw far more enemies at you. They aren't the bullet spongy sort of XCOM style. You're just going to get waves and waves of them, which can overwhelm you in a different way to XCOM, I guess. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed my time. They bring that Gears sort of flavor and what we kind of come to expect from the core game, which can be at times overwhelming with the number of enemies coming at you and how you're supposed to cope. And they've twisted that and molded it into this tactical format, which still works a treat as far as I'm concerned. So with a really fascinating story that kind of, without diving into the spoiler territory for anyone out there who's a big Gears fan, this story connects to the core trilogy. It's set before the first Gears of War, but also connects directly to the fourth and fifth game as well. I'm not really going to kind of explain. There's no time jumps or any of that sort of stupid stuff, so don't get too down the well on ideas there. But just by the nature of the characters that are present and how their story evolves, it connects to, I'm going to assume that 4, 5, and 6 will be part of a trilogy of some sort. I think that was the initial intent. It's basically connecting directly and indirectly to both trilogies, which is really, really interesting. The storytelling, really, really quite great. A couple of the character models are a little bit rough, especially if they're the kind of non-essential burner party members that you can kind of pick up along the way, just the recruits and whatnot. You rescue a lot of Gears or Cog along the way there and recruit them to your team, or just civvies, and then all of a sudden they're part of the team. They look a little bit rough. I kind of compared in the review them to like Mr. Potato Head, where they're just kind of slapping bits and pieces together and there you go, boom, we've got a character. There's a few rough ones like that. But aside from that, really, really enjoyed every moment of my time with the game. So
that's encouraging to hear. This is at the moment, I believe, PC.
PC only, but
coming?
It is going to be coming to Xbox. And actually, to be fair, and Matt, you might shake your head in disgust here, I played with the Xbox controller the entire time.
You said he's got bung wrists, man. He has to be down with the controller.
I know, but I mean, I'm sitting here playing a PC only game at this point. It's a tactics game like that, but this bad boy, the Xbox One controller.
See, that's the advantage of those tactics games, though. There's it no works well. Need, it translates no well. Need for quick
if it's
movement.
It's turn-based, yeah.
So,
yeah. You don't.
No, it does translate very well. So, to play. Yeah. And I obviously did mess around with the keyboard and mouse to make sure that I was across it all for the sake of the view. But once I'd done that, I'm like, okay, I've got a feel for it. I'm going back to the control. Let's go. this is my comfort.
It is nicer to be able to lean back sometimes.
Yeah.
Paul, you forget he did see us attempting to play Doom Eternal at PAX last year on.
Hey, I finished that game.
Oh shit!
Not on keyboard. And
not on the keyboard and mouse, man. I barely completed it with a controller, let alone a keyboard and mouse. That shit's hard.
It would be easier with a keyboard and mouse. I am so far removed from PC Master Race, but like,
oh, I'm sure it would be. But if
learning
you're,
how
if you're
to
not
do that, it's a lot easier.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm the same. There's no way I could tackle it with a controller.
Oh, I guess I feel slightly better about myself because I managed to, but only just.
I can't imagine it would be easy.
I mean, it wasn't an easy game.
Let's move on to our final little part of this. I can't believe that there are, like, three new games that have still somehow come out in the last fortnight. That's kind of crazy.
There's two big ones coming this week as well. So, well, Gears and Streets of Rage 4 comes this week too.
Don't know how big Streets of Rage actually is. I'd like to think it's a huge deal.
It's a big deal for old people like us.
You mean so just like really a game a like deal. Trials of Mana might be?
Hey.
Segue. Well, I mean, had Seiken Densetsu 3 actually got a release over here prior to last year? I think it's original form. It actually managed to come over here in English. And obviously Trials of Mana, however you prefer to pronounce that word, is on the PS4 and Switch in a nice-ish looking version. It's a bit of a come down off Final Fantasy VII.
I'm not a fan of the... I played the demos of those back-to-back, and you can tell where the money went.
It did not go to the voice acting in Trials of Mana, I can tell you that
Oh
much.
My God!
Considering that some of it sounds like it was recorded via Skype in a toilet with absolutely no one voice directing
like,
at all. What's my motivation
on
this
sorry,
line?
I'm thinking of the translation. Actually, I had like some little girl character in my party and they kept using the letter W to like make the cutesy sound. Wait, like...
Please wet me heal
I
you.
I always...
Yeah.
Wascally Wabbit.
I'm hunting rabbits.
Yeah, that sort of stuff was all over the place. And, like, I had the voices in Japanese, and that stuff works more naturally in Japanese.
I changed the voice language back to Japanese after a few hours of English because
I pressed mute.
It's much better. So, yes, Trials of Mana. I've never actually played any of the Mana series. Well, that's not true. I had spent quite a bit of time on Legend of Mana on the PlayStation 1, which is apparently a fairly maligned entry in the series. But remember, we weren't all blessed to have importing people in our family getting us lovely SNES JRPGs like Paul James was.
What are you talking about? I went to a place called Tons of Games starts with A on the border of New South and Victoria. I've just gone Albury.
Albury Wodonga.
When the SNES was out, I did not even know that importing was a thing.
I had this thing called Z-SNES.
I mean, that's how I played Second Densetsu 3 back in the day.
I played Chrono Trigger on a Dreamcast. We've all got our weird...
Yeah.
That's very odd. So, yep, Trials of Mana is... It certainly feels like a SNES game with nicer graphics. So... The only thing I can liken it to, because again, it's really weird to bounce from having just done Final Fantasy VII Remake as my last review over to Trials of Mana, two games ostensibly in the same genre, made by ostensibly the same developer, and as you already mentioned...
A fairly similar fan base. It's super weird, this release date.
Yeah. It is an odd choice. But it's difficult because it feels like they're trying so hard, but they were given so little money that you can really see some of the cracks. And I can only liken it. They're really faithful. Like, it feels really faithful to the SNES original. Insofar as, for those people who played Final Fantasy VII Remake, now cast your mind back to the original Final Fantasy VII and imagine if they literally just did that and the only thing they updated for the remake was the graphics and the audio. Because that's pretty much what
so
they've
just,
done here.
It's just a coat of paint.
Yeah,
but
much.
I mean, I guess the
I mean, it's a big.
It's a massive
coat
of paint.
Like...
They've jumped however many generations. And there are some tweaks here and there, but it still has the pacing and story depth of a SNES title. So it's really all over the shop. And it does...
And I it may just be me, but I feel like a lot of those character designs, when they get more detailed in 3D, some of them make me cringe a little bit. Like, they were more charming in Chunky Pixels.
Yeah, I think...
They seem very... endowed.
Yeah. Risqué.
Yeah. There's a lot of Jessica Rabbits in that game, there seems to be.
I think that's fair enough.
That's
fair
one way to put it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the gameplay. Like, I think it's much better at being an action RPG than Final Fantasy VII Remake is. Because digging into Final Fantasy VII Remake, well, it's an actual action RPG. Like, you press the button and you do an attack. It's not this turn-based system really working hard to masquerade as an action RPG, which is what Final Fantasy VII Remake is. It's not actually an action RPG. When you dig into the nuts and bolts,
is, like, my copy of that did finally arrive, and I'm starting to really like that combat.
I think the combat system's unreal.
The combat's great, but it's not an action RPG. The button presses are not one-to-one. Blocking is bloody useless, and so is dodging. Because, you know, everything is still working off animation cues and things like that. It's, you know, it's not one-to-one. The minute you hit block, you don't start blocking. You've got to finish up whatever animation you had queued up before.
Yeah.
And then
so it's really delayed. This is one-to-one. So it does feel pretty satisfying to hammer away at those enemies. And it moves at a pretty fast clip. That's the other thing. It doesn't have all of that padding and, you know, extra characterization and things like that they added into Final Fantasy VII. It does have some. It allows you to go back and see the backstory of characters that you meet, which, as I understand, is a feature that wasn't available in the original game without starting the game as that character.
Yeah, you would have to go back and...
It lets you now
really,
do that.
I mean, it was
middle.
Quite ahead of its time in that regard with the different characters and how to actually experience their stories. It wasn't like Chrono Trigger where you'd come across this wide cast and eventually you'd kind of catch up with everything. You would have to replay it to be able to see it all.
One of the things they've sort of shot themselves in the foot with that, though, is they pretty much up front tell you that this doesn't actually matter and has no bearing on your current game. Items that you pick up will not be still in your inventory. You can just literally flash back and play a few hours of the opening and then the game will continue on as normal.
Yeah.
And I've seen a few people recommending that it can be a little bit stilted when you do jump back, and maybe you would be better off doing multiple playthroughs. So obviously once I wrap this up and get the review up for player two, I'll go back and try a few of those other intros with different characters. But I guess my main concern is that with the projected, you know, runtime of 20 to 25 hours and a game that I assume will be extremely similar every time you play it, bar the characters in your party and a few story beats, I don't think it's got quite the same replay value it would have back on the SNES.
Not in this
also
day and
back
age.
On the SNES when everybody got like 3 games a year.
Yeah. And that's my other concern, is that, you know, it still plays like a SNES game in a lot of ways. It looks a hell of a lot better, but I think that level of repetition is not something that a lot of people are going to want to plonk 100...
You playing Switch or PS4? Because a lot of that repetition stuff, I feel like, gets more forgivable on a handheld.
Yeah,
when PS4. You're, like,
killing time and again, I think... my understanding of the Switch version is that there are some performance issues. It's not quite as nice of a version as, say, Dragon Quest XI, despite them both running in the same engine and being from... You know,
same publisher.
So
it's almost like Dragon Quest XI is their prestige thing.
But it is running at half the frame rate on the Switch, and there are a few other performance issues. So
probably half the resolution as
well. Yeah, I imagine that would have a few, a bit of a bearing on it. Like, it wouldn't feel as smooth, because, like I said, the combat does feel pretty buttery smooth, but 60 frames per second will help with that. The updated music is fantastic. It does get a little bit chintzy when you realize that it is just those remastered 2-minute loops over and over again, and they're perhaps not quite as memorable as the tracks in something like Final Fantasy VII Remake. Again, the interesting thing is it'll be really hard for most people to have any nostalgia for this, given that the thing was in bloody Japanese up until last year, aside from playing, you know, hacked ROMs.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the things for me playing it, that, yeah, like, I played it back in the day, but it doesn't quite I don't have that same kind of fondness for it because it's not really necessarily 100% how it was intended. You'd like to think that those who did translate did a fairly solid job, but it won't be 1-to-1, and just some of the timing, some of these things, and what they're going for, it may not have translated over perfectly.
Although I think you've probably hidden something there. I don't think we're going to see this game on sale very much because it's going to be a case of the people who are going to buy this game will buy this game.
Yep. Yeah.
And everyone else is not really going to be sold by $20 off.
It's a real curiosity. Like, it's a really weird choice in my mind to take something that never got an official release outside of Japan and to suddenly push it as another remake in the same space as you've just put what is like arguably your most prestige title in your back catalog, which has one of probably the highest budget remakes we've ever seen.
So it's not to mention off the back of the original, which they only officially released 9 months earlier.
Yeah. And again, I wonder if that wasn't them trying to build up some sort of anticipation for this.
Could be just very Japan focused and they're putting it out in the West because they feel they can at least do the numbers.
Yeah.
And
it's worth the translation.
Well, have you heard the translation? As we've said, like, play it in.
Again,
play
like
with Japanese
translation
voices.
On a budget.
No disrespect intended to those voice actors. I'm sure they've tried very hard given world circumstances at the moment to do the best job they can, but the voice director needs to take a good, long, hard look at themselves in the mirror and maybe give the actors some better direction.
I mean, 90% of the people who will buy this game will play it in Japanese anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But it's like, so I'm not having fun with it, but it feels old in a lot of ways in terms of the design. And they've done what they can to alleviate that with some tweaks to the combat system. Because again, I've done some digging to sort of see, okay, well, what have they really changed? Because it's, you know, a little bit difficult to criticize a remake when you have no experience with the original. And I didn't want to just assume that it is just 1-to-1. So apparently they have tweaked the combat system to make it a bit more balanced. And I think so far, that's probably the highlight. And maybe the brisk clip that it moves at, like I'm finding myself in a new area every 30 or 40 minutes, which is, you know, a little bit more in line with that chapter approach they took with Final Fantasy VII Remake, where apart from a few chapters, they really want you to be pushing through fairly briskly and, you know, keeping your attention.
Yeah, sometimes old games are good, which I guess to a certain degree, at least old style of stuff, we will be talking about right after this break. We're going to take a few, and when we come back, hey, random indie love.
Lie on my back. Clouds are making way for me. I am coming home, sweet home. I see your star.
Anyway, we're back, and we spent our whole break talking about way too bigger games that look like small games. Animal Crossing, and everyone's a guilty, evil shark of a capitalist, it turns out. Turnips are the devil.
Winners.
But, you know, there are a whole lot of small little developers out there, like a whole lot of them, and they would all like a few turnips too. So, this episode around, with everything going nuts, and also me not being able to think of any other topic, we're just going to have it light of indie love. Ideally on the, like, more overlooked or left-wing, or perhaps, like, older titles, since none of us here are young anymore, depressingly.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, that also applies to you.
I was trying to deny it.
But we'll start with one we call Dad. Seems appropriate.
Tell us more, Daddy.
Use it.
Fuck off.
Do you, like, have any favorite indie titles of old? Like, say, from when, like, they were first appearing on consoles in the early 360 days?
Oh, so old sort of stuff. I guess the big one that I spent a lot of time with, I guess it was around that era, it's probably mid 360 life, I guess, was Orcs Must Die. That was a tower defense, third person tower defense game that just had the gameplay loop down pat, and then Orcs Must Die 2 just improved it. It was a really good quality tower defense game. Tower defense was kind of just becoming a thing at the time. There was a few of them around, Dungeon Defenders, and then there was Earth Defense or whatever it was that was pretty good, the isometric one on Xbox. But
there were a lot of towers. Somebody who was like the initial indie game reviewer for Hyper Magazine, there were a lot of tower defense games.
But this one have a good sense of humor, well put together. Everything was balanced, which I think is a massive key to a good tower defense game, is making sure the enemies are balanced with the towers that counter them. And the addition of the third person combat was good. It felt like, you know, at times it was a little bit of a get out of jail free card. You know, you could have a poorly designed string of towers and then escape just because you were good at smacking orcs in the head with a sword. But it was good. I really, really enjoyed that. Played a lot of it, especially the second one. Played heaps of the second one, actually. And I was really looking forward to the third one until it became a Stadia exclusive. Good call, guys. Oh, good call.
Wonder how that's working for them.
Yeah.
Probably okay, because there are only like five other games on Stadia that you can play.
Look, they're trying to get out, but they're like someone on a cruise ship at the moment. They just can't. Yeah,
they just can't. They're stuck. They're in COVID quarantine with Stadia.
Ooh, that's harsh. All right, Paul, what about you? What is a gem from the past?
I mean, do you want to focus on a particular gen, or can we just bounce around left, right, and
center? You can have a handful.
Because I mean, there's a fairly sizable sticky note here full of different things that I was kind of jotting down over the course of the last few hours. But, I mean, Matt, you'll probably see through this at the very least. The SteamWorld franchise.
I was waiting for it.
I had to make sure that at least got a shout-out in some significant way. Whether it's SteamWorld Dig 1, SteamWorld Dig 2, Heist, like they're all just... And then obviously the most recent one I've just got... Totally just blanked on the name.
Hand of Gilgamesh?
It's the card-based one. Yeah, that's the one.
Which is a card
game. It's kind of a card-based RPG, yeah. Which, like, I don't even like card-based RPGs, and yet that one got me in. It's just, like, they've got a great personality. Whatever path they decide to pursue, whether it's kind of Metroidvania styles with SteamWorld Dig, or whether they're kind of exploring some strategy with Heist, or whatever path they want to go down, it's really well considered. It's really well executed. Like I said, has a really great personality, and they just become like really, really fun games. So I just, any time that they put out an Image and Form puts out a game, I'm instantly interested. And it's gotten to that point where they've bounced between so many different genres and been successful that I'm willing to back them in. And I did in this most recent case, and I feel like I was, you know, rewarded for that, experimenting with a genre that I typically don't enjoy whatsoever. So... The SteamWorld games would be my recommendation for anyone out there who's not familiar with them. Go out and get them.
I think SteamWorld 2's, Dig 2's on Game Pass as well. So.
Yes.
And those games were, I don't know if they still are, I did actually just buy SteamWorld Heist on Switch a few days, maybe a week ago now, because they were all in pretty deep sale, and that seems like a pretty good...
Yeah, they go on sale pretty regularly.
The first one was super cheap.
Oh yeah, they're pretty good on the discounts. So if you're a little bit unsure, just wait it out a little bit. And it was SteamWorld Quest: Hand of Gilgamesh. So thanks, Stephen, for the subtitle. Oh, sorry, that wasn't a crack. I just couldn't think of the kind of keyword at the end of the main title.
I mean, yeah. Fair enough, Steve.
There's others I can shout out if you want, but I figure we're going to bounce around a little bit. So.
Well, yeah, we're going to bounce around. We'll get Steve to get some stuff off his chest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got quite a few of them. Do we want to go back to like the heady days of the PlayStation Portable?
Let's go back to...
PSP.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Minis.
So I'm going to... Someone who's brainier than me might be like, that's not an indie title, but I want to throw out the DJ Max Portable series, because those games are by... I'm pretty sure you would count them as an independent developer. And those are some of the best rhythm titles that have ever been released, in my opinion. The entire series on the PlayStation Portable. And I spent quite a bit of money importing them from Korea back in the day.
I'll take your word for it.
Wow.
Yeah, no, not my cup of tea, my friend.
Well, that has been released as a PlayStation 4 game now with all of the older tracks from those eras as DLC. But... if you do want to get into some fantastic rhythm gaming, then the DJ Max series is the way to go.
There you go.
Well, that went down like a lead balloon. Anyone else have anything else exciting?
I just know absolutely nothing about it, so I've got nothing to contribute at all.
Never even heard of them.
Yeah, I feel like I may have heard them because of you talking about them in a previous episode that you were on. I think it's really cool looking at the box art and thinking that looked kind of cool.
Oh, it is very cool. I'm a big fan. Okay, I'll go with something a little bit more recent, and you're probably going to say, oh, too popular, but Hollow Knight.
Yeah, too popular.
I will say not popular, but it's excellent, though.
Deservedly
I mean,
so.
Good game, yes, yeah. But
yep.
Never heard anyone talk it up.
No.
Oh.
May as well throw Dead Cells in while you're at it.
See, I prefer Hollow Knight.
Have you
Dead
heard
Cells?
Of Journey?
Well, I was actually going to...
Yeah, his Bastion thing's pretty hot as well.
Well, it is now that it's $3 on Switch.
I did want to talk about... With Bastion and with Dead Cells combined makes Hades. And Hades is fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
When's that
Hades.
Coming to the consoles? To the people who really want to play it?
I've got so many runs in this. Every time there's a new update, and they update monthly with new stuff because it's still in early access... And Supergiant just make great games. They just make great games. And Hades is an isometric version of Dead Cells, and it is pitch perfect. It's got the best story I've ever seen in a roguelike. It's fun. I can't say enough for it. If you haven't played it, it's now on Steam as well. So it's had its 12-month Epic exclusivity, and it's on Steam as well. Still in early access, but honestly, there is so much to this game that you're not missing out by jumping in early access, let me tell you. I've been playing it since day one, and it's amazing.
Do they still have the narrator that's kind of featured in at least the early games?
Not necessarily. The main character kind of talks a lot to himself, and he acts as kind of a narrator, yeah. But also, there's a lot more characters in this. Like, there's the whole pantheon of Greek gods. There's a whole bunch of legends and myths from Greek mythology, like Achilles is your trainer. You run into Hydra as one of the bosses. The Fury sisters are bosses. You know, it's steeped in Greek mythology as if it was mixed with Bold and the Beautiful, I guess, is the story. It just really works. It's fantastic. It's about Zagreus, who's trying to escape from Hades. He's the son of Hades and an unknown person at this point. And he wants to get out to Mount Olympus to his uncles and aunts, which are obviously the gods. So that's the pitch. And he's kind of, you know, his dad's just like, yeah, he's a whiny little bitch. And I don't like you, son. You're a disappointment. And
Jesus, just sounds like God of War here. Kratos and... Oh,
well,
no, nope,
it's closer to Ferris Bueller's Day Off than God of War in tone. But yeah, it's great. Love it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go way back. We're going to look at this a little bit and talk about a little game called Weird Worlds, Return to Infinite Space. And then stare at everybody's confused facial expressions over the webcams.
You said some words, but they meant nothing to me.
Yeah.
I feel like you might have happened upon something even more obscure than whatever the fuck Stephen said before.
At least my stuff has a Wikipedia page.
To my memory, this game came out in like 2005. So this is like back when nobody knew what indie games were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But from memory, and I haven't played it in so long, it's kind of a roguelike / space exploration thing about basically kind of going out, meeting aliens, getting cargo, and getting the fuck back home again before you like just run out of time and die. And I remember playing this a lot in probably 2006. And just as someone who never originally clicked with anything like, say, Civilization, like this was my kind of one more turn and oh crap, why is it so late at night?
Yep.
Type game. And I have like every reason to believe it would probably not look great anymore, but it's actually available on Steam. I checked. It came out 7 years ago, which is like 7 years after it originally came out. It's a pretty old game. But it looks like it actually has widescreen support, which is a start. But I have like every reason to believe that this thing would actually hold up pretty well and be like very simple fun. And like in Japan, it's like 500 yen, so it's probably like $7 in Australia or something.
And this is how we lose Tim for weeks on end. You'll fall back down this rabbit hole.
Super. I do kind of want to get back into some of these. Like, I played a lot of games during this period that like nobody else played. A little less obscure would be Darwinia, but even then, most people.
I feel like I know that one. Even...
Yeah, I know Darwinia.
Our theme music comes from the install screen.
Okay. Bit of insight.
Easter egg.
Darwinia was really kind of. I think it was one of the first titles ever in a Humble Bundle.
Yeah, like that very first
Humble
Bundle.
Yeah, that very first Humble
Bundle. That was mind-blowing. Like, Humble Bundle's like a whatever now, but man, when that first one dropped, holy shit.
Yeah. It came with Braid and Limbo and, like, yeah, just like the creme de la creme. World of Goo, all these kind of, yeah.
World of Goo's worth a shout out now as well. Like, that game was a big deal for a little bit, but, like, again, nobody seems... I doubt that many people actually remember it.
Because
it
got trapped on the Wii.
Physics tower puzzle thingamy.
It's a great physics puzzle sort of thing.
It was an indie game on the Wii, and that's kind of why it got a little bit lost.
It was on the PC, too. It was
well, on PC yeah, but well. I mean, like, the majority of the buzz was around, oh, it's this thing on the Wii, because we could use the motion and all that sort of stuff. And that was kind of the real hook that kind of got the press talking about it or whatever. The PC version, I won't lie, I didn't even realize that it
I
came
think
to
you're
PC.
Talking about a different game.
No, I'm talking about World of Goo.
Really?
World of Goo.
You
it
could
was
use
a,
the
it
waggle
was a Wii game.
For World of Goo.
Yeah.
I would launch that fucking Wii Chuck moat through the window trying to do that game with a fucking Wii
remote.
I thoroughly
enjoyed it with the Wii remote, but I'll be honest, I had no idea it was on... Was it, you know, kind of back in... What window were we talking about there? Probably 2008, 2009? Is that when it came out to PC?
Yeah, it would be. It's like a physics puzzle thing. You make bridges and stuff with
Goo. Yeah, we're definitely talking about the same game, but... Okay. I didn't.
Jesus,
I didn't even realize that it came to PC. So
it's on.
It's obviously proliferated since, but I didn't realize it was kind of in that same window.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure it was one of the Epic free games at one point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right.
If it was, I don't think I have it. And that's super depressing. Says the guy who may actually own it elsewhere anyway. But yeah, the one I wanted
yes,
to get.
Yes,
like,
it definitely was
to.
An Epic freebie. Because I've got it.
Huh, I actually missed one of them then, I guess. I am a terrible person. I have so many Epic games and I've never purchased a single one.
You and a lot of people. I've purchased one or two.
The closest I have is the Shenmue 3 backers trial. Oh no, I do have World of Goo. I take it back. I've just lost it amid the like 50 games I have in here now. Anyway, let's move this back into our focus of, you know, actual indie stuff, and like maybe go towards going to swing a little bit more modern this time. Houston, you've already given Hades quite a shout out. Is there anything else?
Yeah, there was something
last 5 years or so.
Well, I reviewed it not, I guess, 2 months ago now. It would be. It was called Iron Danger, and I didn't get to talk. Didn't get to talk about it on the podcast because just timings or whatever. And it's this really cool kind of spin on a CRPG. With a time-based combat system. So every move in combat takes a certain amount of time to complete. And there's two, you've got two characters, so you've got two timelines that you juggle. And so the trick is, when you're playing, you manage one timeline and set their moves up, and then you rewind time and set the second timeline up with their moves and watch it kind of all play out. But if you get hit... You can adjust because you can rewind time at any point. So, say if you get hit, you can adjust because hits do severe amount of damage. You usually only get two or three hits and you're dead. So, each hit is crucial to avoid. So, you can change your move to a dodge, for example, or a block, depending on your character. And it runs... It's a little bit finicky because it's obviously a kind of tough idea to implement, but they've done pretty well. But once you get your head around the concept, it's really, really good. And it's obviously a little bit skimpy on the voice acting and things like that because it was made on a on
budget.
What is a budget, you know? So the voice actors are probably some of the developers that, you know, have just jumped in and done the voice acting for it. But this combat is great, and there's little combined maps. There's not like a big open world like, say, it looks like Divinity or Pillars of Eternity, but there's little tiny maps. And each map is just like a chapter of the game. So you play out that map and achieve the goal that you need to in that map and then move to the next one. So it plays out in these little chunks and it's really good. I really, really enjoyed it. So it kind of, it was one of those games that just arrived in my inbox, that which I get quite often, you know, hey, editor, you want to review our game sort of thing. And I looked at it and thought, oh, I might do a video of it. But as soon as I started playing it, I felt like I had to give it the full review service because it was really, really good. So,
The last time I got one of those from you, I wasn't able to get past a 10-minute
mark. Yeah.
We're not going to name said game, no, but that is not a thing that happened.
And I gave Dylan a corker the other day too, apparently. So, but anyway,
I want to discuss that off camera. But I still don't even know what that game is yet.
Yeah, I don't know that he does either.
Oh, all right. Okay.
But yeah, so Iron Danger, check it out. It's super obscure, Finnish developer. The English translation seems pretty good, though. That's not a huge shock because Europeans tend to do translations pretty well.
A lot of them can speak English pretty well, it turns out, if you've traveled around Europe.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's really good, really interesting.
It looks pretty cool. Look at the Steam page now. It's like, it looks pretty accomplished.
It's very accomplished. There's hardly any, like, they know their limits.
Hey, it's a free demo. I'm going to click that. Yeah. I'm not going to click that now because that's going to break our Skype call.
Yeah.
But I will click that after we've done recording
this. It's well worth playing. Yeah, absolutely. Iron Danger. Get on it.
All right, Nate. I'm going to actually jump in next to slightly less obscure, but I feel like this is a game we all know and remember, but not many people actually played. And quite recently, I've actually been playing a lot of The Messenger.
Oh, that's no, cool. No! Lot, I played a lot. You'd be surprised how many people played that game. That is the shit. And no, I won't plug Deb Diary now.
And it is
no, Ken. Maybe it's just me. Everything. So go right.
I find Deb Diary. I had the head of the studio, Thierry Belanger. He was on Deb Diary late last year. Spoke all about the game and teased at what ultimately became Sea of Stars, which is their new game.
It's
go check it out.
So accomplished.
Mm.
Like, they, like, it starts off, I mean, the hook of this, if you watched any trailer, is that it, like, kind of alternates between a SNES and a SNES.
Yep.
Ninja game. Kind of Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah, it feels like Ninja Gaiden. Yeah.
Except, if you play it, one, it feels fantastic in a way that a lot of those games actually didn't. Like, it feels, and I'm playing with a 360 snappy controller.
It's
snappy as shit.
It does the Shovel Knight move where it looks like a game from that era, but it plays so much better than they ever did.
Yeah. Also, I will say, like, visually it is very NES and SNES. Like, specifically, like, these are not Sega visuals. Like, you can tell that this is, like, from the Nintendo era, but they also, both when it's NES and when it later goes to the Super Nintendo, like, you can kind of tell, like, it looks a little bit better than I think those consoles were actually doing.
It's a killer.
But it feels so good. And, like, that 8-bit section, like, the things I feel like they could have gotten away with releasing just, like, extending it by a couple of stages and releasing just the 8-bit version of the game and then making a sequel, which is, like, just the 16-bit. And then mild spoilers, you kind of get to the bit where you see in all the trailers where, like, you kind of jump between the friggin' two, and it's, and I'm only, like, fairly recently into this, and it, like, starts to become more Metroid.
Yeah.
Metroidvania. Which is actually just as well, because, like, the main gripe of this up until that point was it was starting to get way too hard.
Well, actually, well, I mean, and, like, yeah, you mentioned how it kind of hard flips into a Metroidvania. Like, that was one of the things I was sitting there scratching my head, because I didn't play it at launch. It was fairly close. But, and I think maybe in the end I even did a review for us, Matt. I can't remember.
Yeah, that, I think so, yeah.
But it wasn't day and date or anything like that. And I was sitting there playing and, like, people are saying Metroidvania. I'm not seeing it.
There is so much in this game.
And then eventually there's that hard flip and it kind of toggles into that and in sync with kind of the 8-bit to 16-bit change. And then I've gone, aha, that's what we've been talking about. Okay, now I'm with you.
And that's what's nice, because you have those portals, again, you see them in the trailer, where you kind of flip between 8 and 16-bit. But because it's in a Metroidvania game, it also means that, like, it's kind of like the light and dark world mechanic you can kind of see in a lot of games. So you've got, effectively, two Metroidvania stages as well. So the 8-bit might open some areas, whereas the 16-bit might open others. So the whole thing's, like, just wickety-whack all over the place. But it does everything so well. Like, it is... Wasn't this, like, the first game from this studio? It was freaking nuts that it's this tight.
Yeah, it's their first game. And their second game, I'm not sure if you're aware, the one I just referenced before, Sea of Stars, they're trying to replicate Chrono Trigger. And they've got...
Is that Kickstarter finished yet?
Yeah, Kickstarter's done. They made an obscene amount of money. They've even got the one of the composers from Chrono Trigger on board as well.
Oh, my gosh. That's going to be a fanboy moment.
Thierry and that team are doing some fantastic stuff.
But anyway, the short of it is, like, I feel like everybody knows this game. I've never spoken to that many people who have played it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it deserves to be mentioned, like, in the same breath as, say, Hollow Knight.
It's up there.
No, it's right up there. But it doesn't have quite the same fandom. You're right, though, that Hollow Knight does. Or Dead Cells.
Or Shovel Knight, for that matter.
Yeah.
All excellent games as well. Yeah. Anyway, Paul, do you have anything to add to the pile?
I mean, if we're still talking about things that are semi-modern, I'll throw Moonlighter out there. Anyone familiar with Moonlighter?
Oh, yeah, I've played a bit of it.
Again, awareness, yes, but never played it.
Yeah, so, I mean, the gimmick, I guess, when you think purely optics, it's still a bit of a dungeon crawler in a lot of ways. It's quite familiar in that sense. But by day, you're a little shopkeeper. By night, you're heading out into the dungeons and you're collecting resources and you're building up your bank, and then you bring those items. You build up your stocks. Then you head back to the store the next day and you sell all that stuff. And you're trying to find, there's this balancing act, trying to find what's the acceptable price, trying to find that sweet spot. Totally don't Google what it is, because then you're just dirty cheating. There is a specific figure there where if you even toggle it. mate, the turnip exchange, that's you pay, I'll pay whatever. No, sorry, I'm not paying for people will pay whatever they want.
Back off the Animal Crossing.
Let's move away from the Animal Crossing turnips. Don't Google it, because that'll kind of defeat the purpose. There was this real kind of just this real joy I was kind of getting out of just working out what that balancing act was. Oh, the people are cracking the shits at me now. Okay, quick. Bring the price down and whatever. But then, again, going out into the dungeon and going, okay, well, this stuff's making me money now. People are happy to pay this. I'm going to go and farm this stuff now, find as much as I can, try very Zelda style once you get into the actual dungeons themselves, but with a kind of roguelike-y sort of aspect to it. Get out there, beat heads together, take it back to the store, sell, make more money, then go visit the rest of the town and upgrade my gear. And this loop was just, it was fantastic. And I really, really enjoyed it. It's one of those games that really slipped through the cracks, I think, for a lot of people. But 100% worthwhile checking out. And that's only 2 years old, thereabouts, probably in the same sort of window that we're talking about with the Messenger.
Yeah. It was another one from that era, Katana Zero. I don't know if anyone played that.
Yeah, I'm playing it at the moment.
Yeah, I really enjoyed...
Hey!
I really enjoyed the way it presented. It made like a 2D platformer game into an actual puzzle game. Each of these screens that you go into, there's a way to get through it based on the skill set you have, because each hit's instant kill. So you've got as many times as you want. It just rewinds back to the start of the level if you die, kind of that Super Meat Boy bit mechanic. But you've got different abilities and they have to be used in the right way to solve, I guess, the room. It was really, really well put together with super tight controls and much the same. Yeah, I remember looking,
again, I think this was on Switch sale recently. I don't know if it is.
Yeah, it was
now.
On Switch. Yeah. It was one that it almost didn't get released in Australia. Because of drug use.
Violence. Oh,
yeah, it had to get re-rated.
Yeah, it didn't.
It had to get re-rated.
Didn't Alex at Kotaku tell everyone to rush out and buy it before it got pulled?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was up.
But
for
it ended up getting
few short hours.
Back on because no, the drug use in it is not really real. That was how they got around it, so.
Actually, no, sorry, I do correct myself. It was Hotline Miami where that snuck up for a few hours.
Yeah, and everyone
rushed out. It did actually get banned. It was just that we'd been sent review codes already.
Yeah.
So those of us who'd received review codes already had access to the game. It was the masses that, and we could review it, but the masses couldn't actually buy it on the Switch because it was already banned by that point.
Yeah.
The ban came somewhere between the review copies going out and reviews going live / game being publicly available. That was a very interesting story, that one.
Interesting that all of these fantastic games we're mentioning, I've played on the Switch rather than any other platform.
Well, it is a new Vita.
Rest in peace.
With
Vita lives. That's my way of saying the Vita was horrendously underappreciated and was the best place to play a lot of indie games.
100%.
Also, the Vita never had the shovelware that the Switch does. Switch is worse than the Vita's Steam library at the moment. Is
tighter.
Yeah.
I actually played SteamWorld Dig in the Vita. That was a freaking good...
That's where I first played it.
I was going to mention...
It was a PS Plus title.
Moonlighter, I was going to say that it really has that sort of... I guess that... Just the word be. But that it has that same sort of hook that SteamWorld Dig had where that... Just that... What's the word?
Yeah, I'm just going to go back. I'm just going to do another run.
It's just that really like... minute progression every time, so every run you're like, oh, but now I can go and do this, and then I can upgrade that, and that means I can go back and do this, and everything was so tightly woven together that it was really hard to find a natural stop point. So you just felt just needed to keep going back because you always had something to do.
Nailed it.
Can I mention a developer?
Onion
Games, which is this very small Japanese company who've put out a handful of titles, some of which are only available on iOS and others are now available on the Switch. So it's Million Onion Hotel, Dandy Dungeon, and Blackbird, which are all really fantastic games. What they are, extremely eccentric, like very eccentric.
I know of Dandy Dungeon, but that's about it. Like, I've heard that name before.
Yeah, Dandy Dungeon started out as an iOS title that was sort of... it had in-app purchases and things like that, like microtransactions, but you could just play through the whole thing for free if you wanted to. And when they ported that to the Switch, they pulled out all of the microtransactions and basically added a sequel to the game in the original game. So the most recent update means that once you finish Dandy Dungeon 1, it then unlocks Dandy Dungeon 2.
Yeah, right, cool.
But it's very cool. And Blackbird is like a... So like a, it looks like a SNES era shoot 'em up, like a like a bullet hell
like
shooter,
Gradius
yeah,
or something like
and,
that.
And it's really really cool. It's available on the Switch. And another one that's Australian developed, Yonder, the Cloud Catcher Chronicles, which
Yonder's really
is
good.
Available on PlayStation 4,
Yonder is super
PC
chill.
and Switch.
I believe.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most chill games I've ever played. I would go so far as saying it feels more chill to me than. Even something like Animal Crossing that people will...
It may actually be too chill.
Well, they don't have the horrendous financial aspect of Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
So you're 100% right.
The late stage capitalism.
Yeah.
Super.
And
super charismatic.
Friend of the show, Lee May, he's writing for whatever their next game is. So
well, hopefully cool. It's Yonder 2. The
I'm
Yondering.
Just plugging Dev Diary left, right and centre here. So
yeah,
don't
no.
Mind me.
You're filling in for Ken. So,
yeah, but I'd do it so much better.
Could you plug a mech game just so it really feels like Ken?
Go watch Ken's Mech Warrior 5 Player 2 Plays on the YouTube channel. youtube.com/player2netau. Done.
That was Ken, absolutely.
What I would like to know for everyone is like what generation would you say really kicked off indie gaming for you?
The last one.
Yes.
I mean, for me, it was a lot of PC titles, but it was 360, early 360 PS3 era.
I was going to say PS3, I think, is where I started really playing the majority of the indie games that I've gotten through.
Well, how many indie games existed before then?
Not many. Like, PC, there was a bit of a scene for it, but it was quite small, and you might pick it up in a shareware collection or something like that. But, yeah, it wasn't really until the 360 came along. And Braid, like... A lot of
Braid, but even Geometry Wars.
Yeah, Geometry Wars. It was kind of a throw-in with Project Gotham Racing, though, and then it became its own thing. And then Braid kind of ran with the, you know, what an indie could do that a AAA couldn't, and I guess that was kind of the kickover point.
And then there's Castle Crashers in that same window as well. Behemoth actually really helped lead the charge. Actually,
Explosion
they did a
Man,
job.
A few others,
Rascals
that were big at the time. Yeah, Rascals.
So, Swarm. Really that whole Xbox Live Arcade movement, and then I guess maybe Sony trying to counter that with things like Flower.
Well, and Pixel Junk games. Yeah. And
Pixel Junk, Journey, Papa and Yo, and a few others.
I mean, up over the- I don't want to call Journey indie just because it had Sony's backing.
Well, yeah, but
if it is, then Journey is clearly the greatest indie game ever made.
I think.
It definitely was still an indie title. Just, yeah, had that little bit of extra financial.
Oomph.
I think that's
support.
Something that's blurred over the years as well, though. We talk about really some of these
has.
Games
I'm glad it
technically
has.
Indie, but extremely successful financially. Look at something like Stardew Valley, which technically an indie game, but
that dude's made
numbers that most indies could only dream of. And for quite a long time,
that's
Minecraft
too.
Was the biggest indie game
in
the world.
Indie.
And
it is the biggest selling game of all time.
Yep.
Like, literally. Yeah.
And up until Microsoft.
But I mean, you look at things like Devolver. Devolver Digital started out as a tiny little company that helped indies get published. And now they have a yearly fantastic E3 conference. And they'll probably have.
The only consistently fantastic
and
E3 conference.
And they will be the only people that have an E3 conference this year, I can guarantee you. So.
I think that probably goes back to what you're talking about with the Switch eShop, though, Matt. Like, sorting the wheat from the chaff. So having that nose to know what is going to really resonate with people.
Devolver sort of have a brand. Like, they have a clear brand that they look for. They look for something perhaps a little adult, a little quirky, but, you know, with really, they're really consistently good games.
Yeah, it's a bit like A24 and Annapurna. Like, they are really trying to get people into that sort of mindset. So you look at that and go, oh, you know, Devolver Digital, I want to play that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, well, you look at the Switch and, like, they need a filter. Like, they need that Nintendo seal of quality, which never actually meant that much other than the game's not broken to begin with. But they can't, like, I'm kind of happy that anybody can make a game and, like, put it out there with a certain amount of talent and a little bit of luck. But holy crap, they need a filter on that store, like, to separate the stuff that we recognize is properly done and, like, of a certain standard. And here's everything else if you feel like exploring the Wild West.
Or if you lost a bet. Or if Sadistic Santa's come your way.
I mean,
it would make it super easy for Sadistic Santa to, like, feel out some games. Actually.
I think the problem is
he might be a Switch special this year.
I think the issue is, like, trying to implement something like that so we could say, oh, okay, well, we'll make it a rating system. And then we all know how many people love to review bomb certain titles when it does something they like or something they dislike.
The thing is, that should not be that hard to get around.
It's pretty
like,
hard
if there's
to
actually
recognize.
A person making the call and they can see that it's being review bombed. Like, it. So long as there is somebody. Like,
yeah, there's a
actual
human there to.
It's
sort
not just an algorithm.
It
will. It should work pretty well. The main issue would be occasionally, like, maybe a game that is good enough would not be able to get up there, and if it gets enough noise, then maybe it could.
Yeah, it can be upgraded.
So I think that's one way they could do it, like have a rating system whereby then you can just go sort by, or, you know, hide all games below this star rating or something like that.
Yeah.
I literally just want to see like a separate section or whatever.
Can I shout out a few local indies that have
kind of... Yeah, let's just go around to wrap this up and like shout out the last couple of titles each perhaps. Yep.
Giant Margaritas, party assorted games, whether it's party golf, party crashes, party poppers. There might even be another one. I'm just going blank on it. They're all fantastic fun, especially party golf. Holy shit. Screen Cheat. Has everyone dabbled in Screen Cheat over the journey? No, you can't go wrong with that one.
Player 2 Charity Marathon has some very good Scream Cheat history.
Sorry, you said Scream Cheat. That's because Jen was playing, I'm sure.
Yes,
Scream
she was.
Cheat is the game.
Yes, Jen did play, actually.
Adventure Pals from Massive Monster. And though not quite Australia, our New Zealand friends book can get some love as well. Reverie, which is a kind of very Earthbound cross Zelda-inspired title. Fantastic, great personality. And they're working on a really cool little title called Trigger Witch at the moment.
Cool.
All right, Huzo, any last shout-outs?
Yeah, I want to say Hand of Fate because I haven't seen Hand of Fate yet.
I feel like that's big enough, but anyway.
Yeah, but I also want to say Speed Brawl. It was a little indie title. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's only on... I don't think it's on any consoles, but it's on PC, and it's very much like someone took Final Fight and Sonic the Hedgehog and smashed them together.
Nice.
And it's really cool. Like, it's like about speed runs and bashing up all these people before you get to the end. It's like a race to bash up all these people, and with quite a good combat system. It's really a lot of fun and well worth, I think it's regularly $10. So check it out. It's a little obscure one, but it's quite good.
Hey, I just got one last one for rhythm fans out there. Spin Rhythm XD, which is on Steam. Aussie.
I know that one.
Very, very interesting Aussie developed rhythm game that has shaken up some of the gameplay mechanics of that genre. And is fantastic, has great soundtracks, and they're constantly updating it with new tracks.
Had a sick custom controller at PAX too.
Oh yeah, nice. Like most you know, DJ controller inputs you can get working with it, and they're really open about trying to get more and more controllers functioning with it. Like, they've put calls out on Twitter like, hey, if you've got a controller you want us to get working on this, let us know and we'll try to source it, or if you're happy to send it to us, we'll see what we can do to get it working in game.
Cool. I don't know how much that effort is going to be worth for them, but it's kind of neat that they're doing it.
Can I also light a fuse? And they're not an indie, but they've produced a couple indie style games. Can I just light a little fuse under Ubisoft's ass? Can we get more UbiArt games, please? Child of Light, Valiant Hearts, more of them.
Rayman.
Child of Light was pretty good.
Yeah, well, obviously Rayman, but...
Does it feel to anyone like that boat has sailed a bit? Like, God, it's been so long.
Oh, 100%. That's why I'm suggesting we light a fuse under them. And if that...
Child of Light
up.
Was...
Average.
Average.
Hey.
Valiant Hearts was sensational. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Valiant Hearts is a gem. No, I'm not going to dispute that Valiant Hearts is the better of the two, but... Don't be talking smack about Child of Light.
It's like a rubbish Ori.
I mean, it doesn't compare to Ori. Ori's
it's
S-tier.
And it's an RPG. Well,
completely different game. Yeah. Combat systems from Grandia. Anyway, I'll just quickly shout out Freedom Planet, which is basically a fan Sonic game without the Sonic license.
Yep.
Built something I would love to see a lot more of with 2D pixel art, assuming it's like on Sega Saturn hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
I really want to see more. The problem is there's like no nostalgia for the Saturn, but holy crap, that thing could do better 2D visuals than anything else of its time. And also like a little game called Dwarfs, !
Is that the kind of ASCII just about one?
Digging until you die, basically.
Oh no,
it's just like a super addictive.
Dwarf Fortress, that's the ASCII one.
No, that's too big.
I've heard of Dwarfs before, but I don't think I've played it.
Yeah, so it's just this kind of like, just kind of digging for gold, like kind of managing a bunch of little dwarves and digging for gold. It's like just a super addict. Again, it's like Weird World, it's a handy little kind of like one more try time sink. If that thing is your bag. But with that, we are going to wrap up because we've run super long. So, Steve, where can we find
Player 2? Hopefully my Trials of Mana review won't take too much longer, and I think I've covered most of my grievances so far. We'll see if we can find some more in between now and then.
So no need to read the review then. Cool. All right. No Twitter handle or nothing?
Gorath44000 on Twitter.
Giving yourself a nice complicated Twitter handle there. All right, Huso.
Usual spots, Huso81 on Twitter. We have a merch store on Player 2 now. It went live just before we recorded
There's a shower curtain covers.
There are some random things on there that this company does, but hey, if you like it, it's there. Go for it. Any profits we make from that just go to keeping the lights on. And my
and beers for the podcast.
No, pay your own beers, tight ass. And XCOM was my latest review. So
I would be so happy if the profits from those store actually had beers delivered to my house. I can give you the web store of my favorite brewery in Japan.
We will send you beers once we get,
if like Minol Beer or Isekatakaya like want to like deliver like based on those, I'll be quite happy.
10 shower curtain orders before we start sending out beers.
All right, Paul.
So obviously, catch me at Player 2. The review is there for Gears Tactics, like I mentioned before. Just went live on Monday night. As of when we record this, about 10 minutes, so Matt, I hope you're ready to pull the trigger.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I need to plug the podcast. Go check out Dev Diary. There's awesome guests every fortnight, every week that you're not listening to this podcast. Then the other week is Dev Diary, so please subscribe to that and go and check it out.
Do note, though, that you cannot get Dev Diary shower curtains because the image was not high enough quality.
Yes.
What a load of shit. But anyway.
Yes.
But it is
demand
what it is.
Demand is high. We are working on it.
Yeah, we'll make it happen. Please buy shower curtains. I would be so happy if somebody buys shower curtains. And then yeah, everything else, player two, Paul James Games for myself on Twitter.
Right, cool. And I am at PretendBeard on Twitter. I had a
fantastic
review of Moving Out.
It was great.
My favorite reference was the porn and pizza bit.
I'm honestly, I'm still not sure that it should have been published as a review. At some point, I was playing that and I was like, I don't know how to write a review about this. And then I just at the moment was like, but I definitely have things to say, so I'm just going to write down the things I have to say.
That's it, man.